Hello and welcome to Join the Docs, our weekly journey into the fascinating world of medicine. Today, Dr. Nigel Guest and I are cruising for a bruising. What exactly is a bruise and what do all the colours mean? We're going to cover how bruises occur and how to treat them yourself. Does a raw steak really work? Also, when might you need to see a doctor? For instance, did you know that you can lose 2 pints, a litre of blood, into your thigh if you're hurt there? We're also going to explore the diseases that can cause bruising and how to spot the early signs, as well as the food and drugs that can play a role in bruising. Spinach is Popeye's favourite food, but what if you have a specific type of heart disease? For prehistoric bruises, you need to ask a dinosaur. But for all the most up-to-date answers, listen to Join the Docs.
What medical morsels can we share today, John?
So today, Nigel, we're cruising for a bruising.
You're always cruising for a bruising, John. Take it away.
Okay. Well, I know that you're a fan of music. Pink Floyd, give us some facts about Dark Side of the Moon, their famous album.
Oh, God, Dark Side of the Moon. So that takes me back a while. I think, God, I think that was way back, that album, wasn't it? Mid-70s, I think. But two things. One, I remember being, well, not in love, but probably infatuated with the French assistant at school. And I'm not sure it's because of any other reason that she had a 2CV, you know, that sort of French...
De Cheveux, the funny-looking little car.
Yeah, is that two horses or is it two hairs? My French is a bit...
two horses.
It's a bit dodgy. And she had the symbol from Dark Side of the Moon, which you'll remember was a prism, as opposed to a prism, and she had a huge one right across the side of both sides of this car. Very arty and very cool. Cool. Yeah, very impressed with that. And then a later recollection is, you may remember, we, as we will probably say on numerous occasions in these podcasts, we lived together, God help us, can you imagine, as students for 4 years.
I'm still in therapy.
I tell you, I'm still in therapy, honestly. And the very first day, because we lived with 4 other guys, we were known as the big lads. I don't know why, because Jonathan's only about 4'6". But we were there for the very first day, and a friend of ours thought it would be a very amusing idea before we got up to this one, that he put Time On by Pink Floyd from Dark Side of the Moon, and the very beginning of Time is playing alarm clocks going off, and he had it really, really, really loud. Oh, and we all wondered what the heck had happened as he played this thing, and it's stuck in my mind ever since.
Yeah, thank you for taking me back, ticking away the hours that make up a dull day.
That's right.
So it's not that song, but on that album, there's a song called Money, as you recall, which was a commentary on capitalism. And they were, what an amazing, progressive, creative band they were. And if there's anyone listening, if it's feasible, and they've never listened to Dark Side of the Moon, sit down and listen to it. It's a work of art. But anyway, for this particular song, they came up with the idea of interviewing various people and giving them some strange questions like, have you ever punched someone? And were you in the right? And for instance, one of the conversations that they recorded, and they just asked random people, one of the conversations was, I was in the right. Yes, absolutely in the right. I certainly was in the right. And then another voice says, you was definitely in the right. That geezer was cruising for a bruising. Additionally, and they use that on Money, and it's in the background, and you have to listen carefully for it. Interestingly, they also, and some people say it was the janitor working in the building who said that, but there's all sorts of theories. They also interviewed Paul and Linda McCartney.
Just average people passing
just average
by.
Just people, yeah. And apparently they thought what they had to say and answer the questions wasn't interesting enough, so they didn't use it.
Brilliant.
But had you ever come across that?
No, that's completely new on me, although that, now you think about it, I can think of, you know, hearing muttering in the background and those sort of things, and it's, even though I'm a bit geeky about those sort of things, I'd never taken in what the words were.
Yeah, well, that's what it's about. And so the expression, cruising for a bruising, actually entered the language, because as you know, I love where the derivation, etymology, the history of language. It was first referenced in a...
Etymology? I thought that was a study of insects.
That's entomology.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Just focus, Nigel.
Sorry.
So there was a USA Forces publication called the Camp Shanks Palisades, And in 1945, there's an entry concerning the Army football team, who at the time were the top of the pile, and they were aiming to play Navy, and they were aiming to bruise Navy, which they seemingly did by a score of 32-13.
And is that a first reference?
That's the first documented reference that I could come across.
Blimey.
Right? And there's other pop culture entries. Basia, that lovely, I think she's Polish singer in 1990, had a song by that title. And in Greece, John Travolta plays a guy named Danny, right? And his best friend is a guy named Kanicki, who uses it. And there's also a surfing movie called Cruising for a Bruising.
Do you get out much?
Or just thought we'd find it
to the movies, probably, by the sounds of it. It's interesting. So where on earth are you going with this?
So the phrase basically means to go out with the intention of either getting hurt or causing others hurt.
Getting hurt? Who the hell goes out to get hurt?
Well, someone who's just likes getting involved in fights, a pugilist.
A masochist?
A masochist, you could say that. So the term...
Beats me.
Well, if you keep interrupting me, I bloody well will beat you. So what I wanted to do is use that as a segue to talk about how one gets bruised or bruising easily.
Well, I'm glad I knew where you're going. So I get all the bruising references now. Okay, definition boy, talk about bruising.
So a bruise, or in medi speak, as you know, Nigel, we love having big words, which justifies us feeling sort of smug about what we know. The medical word for bruise is ecchymosis.
Oh, I like that.
And it's a great word, isn't it? Which basically means discolored skin due to blood leaking out of arteries, veins, or capillaries. And the severity of the injury, the person's skin tone, the depth of the damage, all impact the colors one might see. Traditionally, though, it's red, then yellow, then green, then black, then blue, and purple. And that is because hemoglobin, the constituent in the blood that carries oxygen, contains iron, and it degrades in the skin, and that leads to the changes in the colours.
You know, I this is going to sound terrible for a doctor, but I do like quite a nice bruise.
Actually, a lot of things you say sound terrible for a doctor.
I know, scary, really. But I do like a nice bruise. They do, they're beautiful as they develop, aren't they?
They are, yes.
They're beautiful as well. And I remember a friend of mine years ago, we went skiing, a lady, and she had a hell of a fall on some ice, and delighted in showing us this enormous bruise that, in the course of the time we were there, developed in it was like a piece of modern art, actually. It was like, yeah, I suppose it's that. So that would be like, that would be a sort of, what do you call it when they it's a, like a live piece of art? Anyway, it doesn't matter. And that was beautiful. But I love the way it changes, and I love the way you can reassure patients that something that looks absolutely horrendous is actually just a natural process, and it will go away. And that's a nice thing to do in medicine, as you know.
So, as I mentioned, the person's skin tone can affect the way the bruise looks. I don't know if you knew this, but there are bruising color charts.
Really?
So, yeah, you can actually look at it and work out when the injury was from the person's skin tone and the color.
Oh, that roughly sounds forensic. That sounds,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is,
that's interesting.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, Nigel, as we talk about the etiology, the cause of bruises.
Yeah.
So, I guess one of the first things I would say is, as a takeaway from this, is it's important to know your skin. And I tell people, you know, sometimes, you know, doing a live event and walking around and talking to people, one of the questions I like to ask, preferably someone who looks a bit smug and, you know, self-satisfied, is to ask them in front of lots of their friends, when was the last time that you had a shower and then looked at your naked body in a full-length mirror?
I can see why you walk around at these conferences. Yeah. Makes you harder to hit.
Stay mobile. Exactly. But it's important to know your skin, right? So you should always look at your skin and know all the marks, the blemishes, and everything that you know.
Yeah,
that
I do that periodically, but I get a small survey team in, and they start. They start on either side of my bulk and meet in the middle and confer.
The Incredible Hulk.
Indeed.
So what you're looking for are new, painless, dark or multicolored areas that otherwise might look like a bruise, but might actually be a skin cancer, sure. A melanoma. So, Nigel, my guess is that you've probably seen far more than I have in my career.
I have. You think in general practice that you wouldn't see them very often, but you do. And I've removed what seem to be quite innocent lesions on a couple of times, ironically, twice from doctors. Ironically, one from a dermatologist. And they were, surprisingly, melanomas, which is worrying. And I think it's one of it's the skin cancer that we all worry about. But often, to be reassuring, if you spot these things early and you recognize the signs, and we can talk about that, and get them removed, get them off to be looked at under a microscope to have the histology done, providing they're very early, the prognosis is excellent. There's a thing called the Breslow score, which is a very accurate score system.
Which dictates how far along it is and so on.
How big it is, how deep it is into the skin and everything like that. And that can define your chances of success very well. But if it's left and you ignore these things, it can become severe. And you probably remember from when we were at medical school, the big thing was they said, beware of the patient in your exams
with the
glass eye and the big liver. That's right.
So why don't you explain that?
I was going to say, because that means that somebody will have had a malignant melanoma in their eye, which hasn't been spotted or has been ultimately spotted quite late. And by the time the eye has been removed and a glass eye substituted, it's spread, and it's spread to the liver, and it's spread probably to other areas of the body, and therefore they have the big liver. And that was supposed to be the spot, so to speak, in finals. And I don't think I know anybody who's ever seen that.
No, it's
one of those ridiculous things that we all look for.
But I know that we've started off talking about bruising. We're going to dig down into bruising, but it just struck me as an important opportunity to get this concept out of looking at your body. I mean, women nowadays are extremely good about doing regular breast exam and having their check for cervical cancer. Yeah. Men are pretty crap, frankly, about looking after their health. But this is one thing that anyone can do very simply. Just stand in front of a mirror, look around, and see if you see a discolored area that you think, oh, I don't remember hitting myself. And if it's not painful, think about seeing your doctor promptly. So what about other spots that you might see?
Oh, I do like spots, or as I like to call it, a spot diagnosis. I know. I love to teach the students, because it amazes me that they haven't had any education, a bit like you in dermatology, in terms of you know, what things are. And I love the eponymous names, which I know you do as well. But there's lots of innocent skin lesions that, particularly as you get older, are there. And to teach the students what's common, what's normal, or not what's normal, but what's common and not a worry is important. And there are, you know, different types of skin cancer which have different degrees of severity and likeliness to spread. And it's very important, their education. It's a nice thing to teach. And my favourite amongst all of those is a thing called molluscum contagiosum. And I think that sounds like a spell in Harry Potter. You go, molluscum contagiosum, and all of a sudden you come out in spots. But they're little pearly, wart-like things, particularly in kids, and they often get them in clusters and things like that. And they molluscum, as in snail, so they look like a pearly snail, tiny little sort of few millimetre snail. Absolutely harmless, viral, they go on their own.
So the contagiosum means that they're contagious.
Means that they spread, but they're not really contagious. Otherwise, every kid would be covered in the flipping things, wouldn't they? they would just be normal. It'd be like bed bugs. But it would be nice to make that diagnosis. It's nice to be reassuring, as I was saying before, with those things. And if you get confidence with dermatological diagnosis, incredibly reassuring to patients.
How do you treat them, just as an aside?
You can do nothing with them.
Do they go away?
They do go away eventually. Like all viral things, you sort of develop an immunity. But they're umbilicated. There's a great word. So they're umbilicated. So the center is like your umbilicus, your tummy
button.
Yeah, it's got depression in it. So you can actually... Can you imagine holding onto your child while you do this? You can actually scrape the middle out with a cocktail stick. And that will get rid of them if you can hold the child long enough, because they're not going to be keen. You'll just say, they're going to go away. You can freeze them. People use all sorts of things, liquid nitrogen or carbon dioxide, frozen carbon dioxide, or there are other things you do. Take them down to about minus 37 degrees.
The lesion, not the child.
Not the child, yeah. You don't dunk them in it, because that's pretty a bit extreme. Yeah, but you take it down to that. You basically give them frostbite. Not the child, the little lesion. And they'll go away. Or you can frankly just leave the flipping things alone. But kids scratch them and they can be affected and things like that. But they're interesting. But it's nice to have that spot, and no pun intended, and it's nice to say to the parents, look, they're fine. Just ignore them.
I know practically nothing about dermatology.
Hang on, but... we're just about to hear your dermatological knowledge.
Yes, it'll be very brief.
Compressed.
Trust me. So there are things called Campbell de Morgan spots.
Oh, yes.
I just love the name, which are little red spots. They're quite harmless. Appear after age 40. There are spider nevi, which are like little collections of blood vessels, capillaries under the skin, and they look kind of like a spider's web. And those can be pretty harmless, but they can also be things that appear like that can, in numbers, can be associated with underlying liver disease.
So the thing I really like about spider nevi is how you truly make that diagnosis. And I'm sure you know this, but you get a pen or a pencil, something. And you just poke it right in the center where effectively the little blood vessel is coming out straight through the skin. And you just press that, don't you? And then all the little spider bits disappear.
They disappear. It's magic.
It's a wonderful little thing in medicine. Oh, hugely satisfying.
So I know you do a lot of minor skin surgery in your office.
I do. Minor is my thing, yes. So I remove moles, and that's the skin moles, not the ones in the garden. Clearly, because that would be ridiculous. and we call it minor surgery. So it's not like your major surgery. So I just waft in, no big fuss. So it's nothing like you when you have music playing, fanfares, maidens scattering petals on the floor, dry ice before you go in.
The dry ice.
Music playing. Well, I think it's good. I think you should come with an entrance. But, minor surgery is just rubbish. But interestingly, way back, and again, linking to a friend of ours, ironically, the same friend that played the music that we were talking about with Pink Floyd that morning, he became a successful surgeon, and he worked with me some time ago to create a vasectomy clinic. And we used to run a vasectomy clinic in my surgery, and he came and he taught me to do vasectomies, which is another story. But we used to have patients in, and to relax them during the day, we used to play various music, and one of our nurses was very keen on Cliff Richard, which I don't think was going to relax anybody. One morning we were operating and we had just a mixed playlist, and on came Little Richard, Great Balls of Fire. And it's all we could do to keep a straight face. I just thought I'd throw that in.
That's priceless. You know, I'm thinking about doing major surgery. There's the old joke, isn't there, about approaching someone before you put the local anaesthetic in, and you say, just a little prick with a needle, and you say, I know you are. What are you going
to
do?
You know, I'm sad to say that I occasionally use that joke with people I know.
So you mentioned vasectomy. When I was finishing my training, my boss, who was a lovely, lovely man, he did a private vasectomy clinic, and he threw it to me. He says, would you like to pick it up, John?
Yeah.
Because I just don't have the time to do it this week. And I went along there, and there were six vasectomies to do, which means I would have earned more doing that evening's list of six vasectomies, which they do not take long, than I could earn in, you know, a month, basically. So I was quite excited about it. And when I went in, and basically the men had all signed their consent forms, blah, blah, blah. And the first guy comes in and he's wearing one of those wretched hospital gowns that, you know.
The one with his bottom sticking out the back.
Sticking out the back. They lead him through into the room. And I was being very sensitive. I explained to him everything we're going to do. I had my back turned. I'm preparing the local anesthetic and then the prep. And he looked around. I saw him look around the operating theater. And he suddenly said, oh, the hell with this. And he got up and he ran out the theater.
Really?
He ran out the theater. He ran along the corridor and out the door. And I'm literally seeing this fee that means I'm going to be able to pay my rent that month.
Did you chase after him then?
Well, I thought about it.
With a knife.
I didn't think that would be very dignified.
Say, come here, this isn't going to hurt.
I didn't think that would be very dignified. But let's go back to bruising. And if you're, let's talk about bruising easily. If you get new marks, you should see your doctor. Or if you see a pigmented lesion of any type, whether it's a bruise or something else, you should maybe take a photograph with a ruler next to it so that you can monitor changes in size over time, right?
Yeah. I often tell patients, I've normally seen them before that, and I say in the same circumstances, in the same lighting, if you can, with a ruler, get somebody to photograph these lesions, and then with, you know, watchful waiting, I think is the expression, isn't it, in terms of that?
Basically means do nothing, pretty much.
Essentially, yes. But if you see any change, and I think the key thing that we always try and get over, and I'm sure everybody everybody's seen this, is that if you see a change in shape, it becomes irregular. If you see a mix in the colours, in the pigment, or if you see it raised, or if it bleeds, or if it itches, or it's obviously getting bigger, those are the times to see someone. Mm. Yeah, you can afford to do some watchful waiting, but don't rely on that. If it changes, see someone. It only takes a couple of minutes to do a spot diagnosis. And if something needs doing, something needs doing. And the vast majority of these things are benign. Yeah. People worry about them. As a doctor, I would rather see them, reassure, or get the histology on them than anybody having one of the serious skin cancers.
We're talking a little bit about bruises that you can assigned to an incident, right? Oh, yeah, I remember I got up in the middle of the night and I banged my knee on the edge of the bed or whatever. So if the pain is not severe, the swelling's not too great, the swelling isn't increasing, and the range of movement of the relative body parts, so you can move your knee, is not impaired,
yeah,
it's probably going to resolve over 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you often see the ones, I mean, I'm sure you've seen them as well, where the bruise, what they call organizes, I think, is that right? Am I making that up?
And it's basically
forms a hard lump.
Yeah, it becomes a hard lump. If fibrosis, it organizes and it can become quite firm.
Well, that's how fractures heal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you get a blood clot between the ends of the bone and then they organise. And those wonderful little creatures, I say creatures, their cells on the osteoblasts, osteoclasts come in and eat it and reshape it. Yeah. I like to think.
That's a nice...
Not very medical, nice, but it's, you know...
But you can get bruises in special parts of the body, so like bruising an ear. Right?
Oh.
Like if you've been punched in the ear?
Let me tell you a story. So I had a patient who's actually, it doesn't matter, but who's a wrestler. And he got into wrestling, and actually he's doing really well. But he's a wrestler. And of course, in the wrestling, the type of wrestling he was doing, you're often having your ears compressed or almost rubbed, a bit like rugby players do. Mm. And you often see, and he used to get cauliflower ears. And you often see people with...
So cool, because it looks...
It looks like a cauliflower and really blood.
Without cheese.
Well, that's right, yeah. Macaroni goes well with it, I think, anyway. But anyway, that's going to be our culinary program. But what you don't see is when it's happened acutely, when it's just happened or within a few days. And when it first happens, before it turns into the cauliflower ear that they get, you know, a long time down the road, it's liquefied there. It's still blood. And one of the satisfying things that you can do is drain it. So you can put a needle into this cauliflower ear, which isn't particularly painful. I've never felt a thing. And into the ear and suck out the blood. Another joyous thing you can do in medicine, and actually, it's quite effective, and I must have done this loads of times.
And then what?
For this,
like the
compression. Yeah, you've got to have some compression on, but it's stopped bleeding by that point anyway. Right. So if you can suck, so to speak, aspirate would be a better word, the blood out of there and the serous fluid, the fluid that sort of separates from the blood, you can contain it quite well, and that's an interesting thing. And you don't often hear about people doing that, but it's a joyous thing to do, I can tell you.
Going back to what I was saying, if you've had an incident, you've banged yourself, you've been hit, whatever it may be, and we've talked about things settling down over 2 or 3 weeks, if the criteria are not met, meaning that it's not getting better, the swelling's increasing, the range of motion is limited, the pain's increasing, you should see the doctor, because it may be the harbinger of an underlying problem. But assuming that that's not the case, the initial post-injury phase, you've talked about applying compression to a cauliflower ear or to a punched ear that's not become a cauliflower ear yet.
Yeah.
So initially, if you bang yourself, the treatment is rice, R-I-C-E. Rest.
Boiled.
Brown.
Forever.
With butter. So it's rest, ice, compression, and elevation, right? So put some ice on the brick. You'll see football players who come off injured. They put on an ice pack. They put on a protective boot.
Yeah.
And they elevate the injured part. You should avoid medications, if you've got a sizable bruise, that interfere with blood clotting, like the so-called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Yeah.
Ibuprofen
That's
is an
a classic,
example.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
a classic one. And instead, you should use acetaminophen for the pain, which in Britain is called paracetamol or Panadol. And in America, an example is called Tylenol.
Yeah, and you should avoid aspirin, really.
Drugs. If the pain is increasing, if a lump is seen and felt, you may be developing a hematoma, which is a fancy word for a bloody great big blood clot.
Yeah.
And, you know, to give people a perspective, if you get a bruise in your thigh, you can lose 2 pints of blood into your thigh. And that can, I mean, that's, you know, a quarter of your blood volume.
So it's an armful.
It's an armful.
It's too armful.
And actually, in the limbs, that can be very, very dangerous because you can develop something called acute compartment syndrome, where basically the blood clot presses on the blood supply to the muscle, and the muscle can die, and you can actually end up losing a limb. So it's important.
I mean, that's unusual, isn't it? But I mean,
it's rare, but important.
But there are lots of other treatments as well.
Yeah. So some of them, we've talked about rest ice compression elevation, using acetaminophen, taking it easy. What about vitamin creams?
Or even vitamin creams. It is vitamin, isn't it? You always tell me it's vitamin. Vitamin is the right pronunciation.
But, hey. But I've seen things like on the internet, you know, Dr. Google, eating pineapple or applying extract of comfrey.
Eating pineapple. Does pina colada count?
Yeah, I didn't see any evidence that pineapple helps, but extracts of comfrey, which is a plant said to have healing effects, there's some interesting positive evidence, actually.
Comfrey's interesting. It's a very good fertilizer. My other half grows it, you know.
I didn't know.
So if you get a bruise,
I know where to come.
I'll put some in the post.
So, you know, sitting next to you, our skeletal friend has clearly been punched in the eye and has got a steak over his bruised part.
He has. I'm quite hungry just looking at that, actually.
Maybe we could sneak it off.
I think we should.
Is there any evidence that putting a steak on a bruise does anything?
I can't believe anything than being cooling. Yeah. I suppose you could argue it's compressive.
It's a waste of good meat, though, isn't it?
I would eat it after, obviously. It's like putting frozen peas on it. If you put a bag of frozen peas, I mean, what you can do? Throw them away after? You have them with a steak.
Have them with a steak. There
Absolutely.
You go.
I put chips on the other side. What about leeches? Not eating them, obviously.
With the steak?
But people use leeches, don't they?
Yeah, they're still used.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, and more so, people, they farm them and send them out. Because the classic that I've ever heard of is that, and this must have been a hell of a hen night, is a bride getting a black eye and wanting to get rid of it before a wedding. And then putting leeches on to try and get as rid of as much of the blood as you can. I'm not sure how accurate that would be. But yeah, it works. And if you've got a residual, it'd be good on your ear, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be good.
You could put leeches on your ears. I wish I'd thought of that.
Probably not as satisfying as putting a needle in and sucking it out.
Well, you could do both.
But it's important to mention that if people are taking anticoagulant medications, things like Coumadin or Prasugrel or Apixaban or Clopidogrel. Coumadin, they call it in America.
All right.
Actually, the derivation of that word, I know you know.
Warfarin.
Like so warfarin, the derivation of the name is interesting. It was discovered in the American state of Wisconsin. And at the university there, they have an organization called the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, or WARF. And the chemical behind it is coumarin, so it's warfarin. It's also used to make rat poison as well as thinning the blood.
Oh, rat poison. Yeah, that takes me back to a story. So again, linked to the same friend, again, coming through the theme through this, we should have a whole podcast about him. When we were in said house that we mentioned earlier, we had a rat, didn't we? We did have a rat, and we had to have the rat man in and warfarin was put down. Anyway, that's another podcast.
Well, so if you're on this kind of medication, you might have been told that foods that are rich in vitamin or vitamin K, things like asparagus, cauliflower, and green leafy vegetables, you need to eat those cautiously as they impact how the coagulation medicine works.
You're going to have to eat a hell of a lot of cauliflower or asparagus, aren't you? I mean, that's going to be a hell of a veggie night.
Yeah, it really would. But you will have, with those medications, Nigel, you'd have had to monitor people to make sure their levels are correct.
Absolutely. And the irony is, if somebody is over anticoagulated, then you would give them a dose of vitamin K. It's a complex pathway.
Yeah, it is. But conversely, people who are taking large doses of these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or aspirin, or steroids themselves, they may be taking steroids for many of the conditions that we talk about on this podcast, or diets that are poor in vitamins or vitamins K and C, they can lead to bleeding gums, a bruising tendency, and various other symptoms, right?
Scurvy.
Have you ever seen a case?
No, I haven't. But it's so interesting, isn't it? Because that's where the whole thing about Limeys came from.
Yes, that's right.
In terms of
that's what Americans call the British.
Yes, that's right. Because that was because the British Navy, wasn't it? Is that they got scurvy, which is a lack of vitamin C, and their teeth would fall out. They get bleeding and bruising, just like you were saying. And there was an experiment a guy carried out on one of the ships, a ship's doctor, where he had to change diets. And one of the elements was to give them lemons and another citrus fruit. And whilst all the other guys in different groups, they gave them, one of them was to give them rum, and one of them was to give them all sorts of different treatments for this malaise they had. They didn't know what it was. But they discovered that the citrus fruits worked. But interestingly, he used lemons for that. And lemons have more vitamin C than limes. And the only reason they call them limeys is because you can store lime juice better than you can store lemon juice, and therefore it was easy to transport. Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, a useless fact.
But that's the sort of thing I normally say.
I know. I'm turning into you.
It's a treatable disease.
Let's hope so.
So other than being hit, what else can cause spontaneous bruising, easy bruising? So things like leukemia and cancer, we don't want to frighten people, but leukemia and cancer can be, bleeding can be the first signs of those diseases, as can, you know, people who are receiving chemotherapy or radiation for cancer can also have bleeding. And such people, if you have those symptoms, get to the doctor because you may need some additional treatment. Interestingly, I know you'll like this, Nigel, aggressive exercise can provoke bruising.
Oh, I always get aggressive when somebody mentions exercise. That's it's not good.
So I was going to say, before commencing an exercise routine, get guidance from a certified trainer or your doctor. And of course, if your doctor happens to be Nigel, he's going to say, oh, I wouldn't do that if I could.
Doesn't sound like a sensible course. No, it's a very sensible course of action, yeah. I have to say.
Don't do what I do, what I say.
Absolutely.
Is that it, Nigel?
Do as I say, not as I do. Is that what you said? I don't know.
Something like that.
Whatever. But we rearrange your own sentence.
But interestingly, people who start doing exercise and don't get the proper footwear can end up with painful bruising in their feet, their ankles, their knees. So proper footwear is essential.
Yeah.
Bruising on toes, right? The classic thing is the middle of the night stub toe. But if you notice a bruise below one of your toenails,
yeah,
or fingernails, and you don't remember hitting it, get thee to a doctor. That can be a so-called subungual melanoma, which is the
you're right. And that's very, very important. But you were talking about that. One of the joyous things in medicine, as we often say, is a subungual hematoma.
Oh, yes.
Oh, see, I know you'll be excited about that.
So that's a blood clot under the nail. I know where you're going with this.
The treatment for this
is joyous.
Is a joyous. And there will be fights almost in A&E, yes, in ER, yes, departments as to who was going to treat this, because everybody loves this.
It's lovely.
And there are few ways to do it, but the idea is you want to effectively drill a hole through the nail and to release the pressured blood underneath it.
Which is causing the pain.
Oh, causing the pain. And obviously, the desire to fight to be able to do this is purely to ease the pain, not for the aesthetic effect. So you can either use a needle and bore down, use a cutting edge. Yeah, and my method was to have a paper clip that you straighten out a bit. You heat the paper clip and essentially burn a little hole through the nail. And the moment it goes right through the nail and releases the blood, it's a little spout of blood comes out.
It's like a little fountain.
Joyous.
Like Las Vegas. It's one of the fountains. It is.
It's one of those moments in medicine that we all enjoy.
It is utterly, utterly joyous to do that. And I, on one occasion, I got a subungual hematoma and I was on my own.
Oh, no.
And I'm thinking, bloody hell, this hurts like the dickens. I actually hit my hand with a hammer.
Or given your DIY skills.
Yes.
Or DIY skills.
But actually, I released my own subungual hematoma. Actually, the smell of the burning nail is a little bit off-putting.
It just makes me feel hungry. It does. A bit like the steak on the skeleton.
It's cooking flesh, I guess. So, of note, females, women, bruise more readily than males. And I'm not talking about egos, Nigel, so down, boy.
I'm saying nothing.
And as we age, incidence increases. And one particular area of the body, bruised legs, you see it in older women and men. And as the bruise compromises blood flow in the skin, especially of the lower leg over the bone, that can lead to tissue loss, which can become very, very problematic and form an ulcer. But there's also another area, Nigel, that you and I were chatting about before that I think maybe you will certainly have seen a lot more than I have in your practice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about these, the concern about the signs of bruising, you've got to be aware, certainly in children or in anybody, that is. But, you know, you've got to think of abuse sometimes, haven't you? You've got to think, you know, has this been an accidental injury? Is this something that's been created? And I think we are always tuned to that, but I think it's important to emphasize that because that applies to everybody. If you think you see someone who you think is getting excessive bruising, you might have some concerns. It's always worth flagging it up. And I know people are concerned about causing trouble, but there are, as we know, people that are abused and do get hurt, and be that domestic violence or whether they're children, it's really important to bring that to the attention.
So it's a great point. And you can note the shape, right? The shape, bruising on arms, for instance, if you see maybe 4 or 5 round bruises that kind of looks like someone has been
gripped
really hard. And then asking some key questions, making sure that you're interviewing the patient privately so that they feel liberated to say, because obviously, you know, you want to protect them from that kind of situation. Propensity to bruise can run in families without being a disease per se, but there are various inherited maladies that result in easy bruising, with many declaring themselves in childhood, such as hemophilia.
Yeah.
I've seen one case of hemophilia in my surgical practice, but what about you?
Yeah, I've got some hemophilia accident. And it's interesting because if you go back to the history of that, I mean, it's often was known as the royal disease. I don't know whether you know that. Okay. It's because our own dear royal family, or certainly Victoria, Queen Victoria's family, there were quite a lot of members who had hemophilia or who were carriers of hemophilia because carried on an X chromosome. It's believed that Victoria herself was a carrier, and they lost a lot of family members. And the debate is whether it was interbreeding and all those sort of things. And there's all sorts of debates about whether there's still, you know, silent carriers going on in the royal family, but largely that isn't the case nowadays. But really interesting, because it is the heredity of hemophilia is fascinating. I won't go into it now. Maybe that's something we'll look at when we look at genetics. But yeah, that's a condition that is out there, and lots of controversy about people that were treated with contaminated blood products in the past. But, you know, again, things we can discuss. But yeah, no, it's fascinating. And it's quite rare, but fascinating.
Classically, in the Russian royal family, there was the young prince who had hemophilia, was purportedly treated by Ra-Ra Rasputin.
Was he the lover of the Russian queen?
He was.
There must be a song about that.
Yeah, there you go. And then there are things like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which I've never seen a case of.
Oh, I've got a couple of patients with Ehlers-Danlos. That's really, really interesting condition where you're... connective tissue, you know, the stuff that connects your bones together or is the structure of your skin or structure of your blood vessels, becomes more stretchy.
Elastic.
Yeah. And people with Ehlers-Danlos have all sorts of problems with hypermobility, you know, sort of double jointed, as people would call it, where your joints can stretch or your bones can be out of alignment. There are lots of conditions linked with it. One of the interesting things is a very stretchy skin. A normal skin, you can normally pull up and stretch perhaps 1 or 2 centimetres and springs back. People with Ehlers-Danlos, you can stretch it out to about, you know, 6 centimeters or something like it. It's like, you know, ping, drop it back. You don't do that because that's obviously wrong. But
there's anyway.
Yeah, but there's a diagnostic criteria. It's very interesting. But of course, that can affect their blood vessels as well. And the collagen and the connective tissue in that can make it, because it's not correctly formed makes it weak and therefore much more likely to rupture and bleed and burn. So yeah, there's some very interesting conditions out there. There's also
von Willebrand's disease, which is where people are missing a clotting factor. And that may not pop up until later in life, but it's treatable and shouldn't be ignored unless they have major blood loss. And there's a whole bunch of, I think just maybe touch on, Nigel, chronic diseases can have a tendency to bruise easily as a characteristic of those diseases.
Yeah, there are endocrine or metabolic diseases Cushing's disease. I mean, you can get it with liver disease.
Yeah.
There are lots of reasons that cause that, and I guess that sort of re-emphasizes where we were before, doesn't it, in terms of whilst we talk about the bruising, and yes, we've laughed about some of the bruises and our experiences and things like that, is that if it's persistent or recurrent, as we always say, get thee to a doctor and think about it, because sometimes they're rare, but there are causes there that can be rapidly picked up with a simple examination and some tests. And I think that's very important to emphasize.
So in addition, I mentioned cancers and leukemias, but, you know, it can be a sign of what's called a covert, hidden cancer. But there's also conditions which I was always fascinated by. Immune thrombocytopenic purpura,
ITP. Ooh, ITP.
It used to be called idiopathic, which is a fancy medical word for saying we have no idea what causes it, but we now know it's an immune disease. So where basically your immune system mistakenly attacks a blood component called platelets that are involved in the blood clotting mechanism, such that most minor trauma, you know, causes a large bruise or nosebleed. So again, you know, if you are bruising easily, take it seriously.
Yeah, and most times it'll be nothing, but worth checking
Actually,
out.
Just briefly, I was on an aeroplane flying over the Atlantic, and we're at 38,000 feet, and there was the tannoy, you know, is there a doctor on board? So I volunteered. They've got a kid who was flying with his uncle. He had flown from Africa to London, and they were, I forget where in East Africa, and they were flying from London to New York, and this poor kid had a nosebleed and they couldn't get it to stop. And I was looking after this kid. The captain came back and said, "I understand we've got a case of possible Ebola on board."
What?
Kid's got a nosebleed. So as you say, it's normal.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're running out of time, just a quick cracker joke for you, John. So do you know why bananas are often bruised?
No idea.
Because their peelings got hurt.
Oh, God.
I know, that's shocking, isn't it? Thanks for being here to join the docs, and hopefully we've stimulated your appetite for more medical morsels. And to remind you that any new tendency to develop a shiner should result in you seeing the doctor.
So if you've enjoyed Join the Docs, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, tell your friends, visit our website at jointhedocs.com, where you can get all sorts of additional material, great merch featuring the work of our very strange but hugely talented artist, Robin Gott.
And if you want to reach out to us to ask us a question or suggest a topic, please use our social media at Join the Docs.
Until next time, everyone, please stay happy, stay healthy, because it beats the alternatives. Remember, we spend a long time dead. Bye for now.
Bye.
We are grateful for you listening to Join the Docs. This is the legal stuff now that we have to say. The views and opinions expressed on Join the Docs are those of Dr. Nigel Guest, myself, Jonathan Sakia, and other people on our show, but please be aware that Join the Docs is not intended to be medical advice. It's for information and entertainment only. Please always take any health concerns to your doctor or other healthcare provider. We respect the privacy of patients and never identify individuals unless they've consented. We may change details, dates, place names, and so on to protect privacy. Listening to Join the Docs, interacting on our social media, emailing, or writing does not establish a doctor-patient relationship. Phew, well, I'm glad that's out the way. Please, everyone, be safe and well.